Chinese President Xi Jinping warning his U.S. counterpart Joe Biden not to cross Beijing's red line over Taiwan. The European Union imposes new sanctions on a group of Iranian individuals and entities over Tehran's response to the recent riots in the country. And Turkey arrests 46 people in connection with a bomb attack in an iconic Istanbul district that left 6 people dead and scores more injured. Welcome to World News. Here in the Iranian capital, I'm your host, Badr Zajafik. Good to have you with us. Our top story this hour, the Chinese president warning his American counterpart not to cross his country's red line over Taiwan. Xi Jinping issued the warning in a landmark three-hour meeting with Joe Biden, ahead of the G20 summit in Indonesia's Bali. According to the Chinese state media, Xi stressed that Taiwan is, quote, the bedrock of the political foundation of bilateral ties. He said, however, that he's looking forward to working with Biden to put Beijing-Washington ties back on the right track. Biden said that the U.S. wants to manage differences with China to prevent competition from becoming conflict. Both leaders stressed the necessity for handling their relations in a peaceful and proper manner. Tensions between Washington and Beijing have been simmering in recent months, especially over what China calls the U.S. interference in the affairs of Taiwan, a self-ruled island that Beijing claims as its own. A professor of international relations from Oslo, Glenn Deason, says that the U.S. has a dual personality toward China. It says something, but it does something else.
The United States has a tendency to say one thing and do something very different. So, for example, the main security threat for China is the effort of promoting secessionists within Taiwan to break free from China. Now, the U.S. always states it's fully committed to the One China policy, which for the past 40 years, the U.S. accepted that Taiwan is a part of China and they should only have cultural and economic connections to Taiwan. They claim that they abide by this, but at the same time, they tend to gradually undermine the One China policy. The U.S. also says they want stable, predictable economic relations with China, but at the same time, they're going into a full economic war, blocking the export of high-tech products, and very openly saying that they want to slow down or even weaken the Chinese economy. So, and at the same time, they have their officials traveling around the region trying to recruit other countries in East Asia into what's effectively an anti-Chinese bloc. So the United States, they seem to mobilize against China, while at the same time, they are saying that they want more stable and peaceful relations.
Now, the 9th Joint Economic Commission of Iran and Venezuela has started here in Tehran, and the three-day event officials from both countries are discussing ways to enhance economic collaboration in different sectors. Gisu Mijahmedi was also there.
A high-ranking Venezuelan delegation is in Tehran to take part in a joint economic meeting with the Islamic Republic. The purpose of the commission is to deepen cooperation in strategic areas as part of a 20-year agreement signed between the two countries.
This is the 9th Joint Economic Commission, and as you know, representatives from both sides have identified potential areas of cooperation in different fields, including transportation, industries, agriculture, energy, science, and technology. We will be trying to find ways to facilitate trade between the two countries to boost bilateral relations in order to avert the consequences of U.S. sanctions.
The Islamic Republic of Iran and Venezuela are two independent states that share common views about many regional and international issues, such as seeking independence, the right to self-determination, and a multipolar world order.
We care about the well-being of our nations. Our values are different from imperialistic countries. Now that our people and our governments are united, we can avert the U.S. sanctions and allow out countries to prosper through bilateral cooperation and a strong political and economic ties.
Part of our scientific cooperation and training includes ways to advance new trends in molecular biology, biotechnology, and proteomics for cancer treatment.
In Venezuela, we have been testing regenerative agriculture in order to avoid desertification. We have achieved excellent results, and now we are ready to share our experiences with Iran.
Iran and Venezuela signed a 20-year cooperation roadmap during a state visit by President Nicolas Maduro to Tehran in June 2022, as the two oil-rich countries sanctioned by the U.S. pledged to boost bilateral ties. The 9th Joint Economic Commission of Iran and Venezuela will be going on for another 3 days. It is expected to pave the way for implementing the cooperation agreements signed between the two countries in different fields. Gisumi Shahmadi, Tehran.
Iran says it's provided evidence to countries whose nationals are involved in recent riots in the country. Foreign Ministry spokesman says that some ambassadors have been summoned, served with a note of protest, and requested to provide a diplomatic response. Nasser Kanani says illegal measures have been adopted for countries and foreign nationals linked with the riots. He added that Iran has also taken necessary measures in response to, quote, foreign intervention that caused damage to the country. Riots broke out in Iran in September after a young woman collapsed at a police station and died in hospital days later. Tehran has blamed foreign provocation for the riots, saying that some countries like the U.S. and the U.K. were directly involved in stirring up the situation. Time now for the news review. The European Union has imposed fresh sanctions on Iran over its response to the recent riots in the country. An EU statement says that 29 individuals and three organizations have been targeted over what it calls Tehran's widespread use of force against peaceful protesters. Interior Minister Ahmad Vahidi, as well as several military and police officials, are on the sanctions list. Press TV is also one of the three entities blacklisted. The sanctions include travel bans and asset freezes. Tehran has warned of a proportionate and firm response to the fresh EU measures. The bloc came up with similar sanctions last month, targeting over a dozen Iranian individuals and institutions. Tehran rejected those bans as a clear example of meddling in its internal affairs. Iran also described the move as another proof of the EU using human rights as a means of achieving its political goals. Now, to get insight and discuss this, I'm joined by a couple of guests. Hakima Sakai-Biria, assistant professor with the University of Tehran, is joining me. Also with me is Elijah Magnier, journalist and political analyst in Brussels. So let's start with Elijah. Elijah, this is the sanctions. This is not the first time, as you know, that the EU is imposing on Iran, Press TV included. So what about France? We had yellow vests, and we had people losing their eyes, people getting killed, getting maimed for life. So the EU should also think of imposing some sanctions on France, and even worse than that, police brutality seen in the world, like that Jack Floyd saga that rocked many parts of the world.
Well, first of all, it is a general rule in the West that what is permitted for us is not permitted for other countries, particularly those countries like Iran, Russia, China, and North Korea, Cuba, who are against the U.S. hegemony and against the Western dictate. Secondly, there are, yes, indeed, as you rightly said, 1,049 people killed at the police station in the U.S. Nobody speak about them. The double standard is widely spread and widely used in the West. We look at countries depending on our benefit and how we deal with them. Human rights and freedom of expression is exerted not on Julian Assange, but is exerted on countries that are challenging the U.S. hegemony. So inevitably, when we look at the riots in Iran and the consequences of people going in the street, burning the property of the government, killing police officers, wounding 1,000, killing 52, burning ambulances, all these, including the involvement of armed elements in Kurdistan, trying to stir up the Shia Sunni in Sistan Baluchistan, evoking the partition of Iran in the north, all that is something that the West has really mastered and is very good in playing it, mainly the color revolution that hit several parts of the world. So basically, to sum up all this, it is a double standard indeed. We look at countries who are challenging the hegemony of the West in a different eye and a different consideration, of course.
Okay, thank you for that. Now on the phone with me is also Ms. Birra. Let me ask her this question. Ms. Birra, good to have you with us. So there's also this ban on press TV. And I mean, let's make a comparison between what press TV is doing, being the voice of the voiceless, covering what's happening in Palestinian occupied land and what's happening in Yemen and elsewhere in the world, and what some UK-based Persian-speaking TV channels are doing, not in their capacity as media. They just simply look and sound like a war room or something like that.
Of course. Yes, what I want to say about this is that by sanctioning entities like Press TV, European Union and, of course, you know, countries like the United States are supporting this move by the European Union, are attempting to create a complete media blackout in the world. You know, media monopoly is turning into media dictatorship, basically. That, as you said, the voice of the voiceless is going to be muted. In a way, you know, the only thing that you can hear is what the, you know, the powerful countries want you to hear. And, you know, the as you know, the ownership of the many media entities around the world is held by, you know, very few corporations. So we are seeing a situation where these countries are actually using the moment, and actually you could say abusing the moment, to create this sort of media blackout to achieve some sort of political end. And, of course, this is happening at a time that we are reaching the end of the Western global order that has been there for the past 500 and so years. Mm. You know, we have had a colonial world order in which these European countries were used to you know, their old colonial tactics of removing the countries, the governments with which they had difficulties, and that was something that could be done easily. Then we had the bipolar world order, and then we had the American unipolar moment. But now we are reaching the final years of that Western global order. And I believe that when we are reaching the end of a global order, you would see much more violence on the side of the countries that are the losers, basically. Okay. You know, the European Union is losing its power, the United States is losing its power, relatively speaking. And so you see that they are bringing every measure possible here to, you know, create a one-sided media environment in which there is no room for any alternative message to be given to the audience. Basically giving them a choice of hearing this media outlet or the other.
Okay, that's all the time we had. Let me thank our guests, Elijah Magner in Brussels and Hakime Safavirya in Tehran, on the phone with us. Now moving on, Turkish police say that they have detained 46 people in connection with the Sunday deadly bomb attack in the heart of the city of Istanbul. A Syrian woman is among detainees, so the police say has planted the bomb. The woman confessed to have received training by militants affiliated with the outlawed Kurdistan Workers' Party, PKK, in northern Syria. The Kurdish militant group, though, has denied involvement in the bomb attack. The U.S.-backed Kurdish militant group in Syria, known as SDF, has also denied any role in the bombing. At least six people were killed and more than 80 others got wounded. The blast took place on the busy Istiklal Street of Istanbul, which is popular with locals and tourists. In the meantime, international condemnations of the attack and condolences for the victims are pouring in from across the world. Messages of sympathy have been issued by Iran, the European Union, France, Ukraine, Greece, Egypt, and the U.S., among others. Turkey has rejected the U.S. extension of condolences. Authorities there have linked Washington's support for Kurdish militants in Syria to the explosion. A presidency official says that the attack is the result of the backing that the PKK is receiving from foreigners, without mentioning the U.S. Interior Minister Soleiman Soylu also likened the U.S. condolences to a murderer arriving as one of the first at the scene of the crime. Our correspondent in Turkey, Rashan Saklam, joined us from Istanbul to elaborate more on Turkey rejecting the U.S. sympathy regarding the recent deadly blast in Istanbul.
The Interior Minister, Süleyman Soylu, said that we are not going to accept Washington's condolences in the incident that took place yesterday. The terrorist attack that happened in Taksim was done by terrorists from or related to the PKK, PYD, YPG. And it is known for Turkey and now I think the world that the United States is actually supporting those groups, the PYD particularly, and YPG, which are the armed and the political wings of the Kurdistan Workers Party, PKK, inside Syria, by weapons, by money, and logistics. So Turkey have always called the United States to stop supporting them. Since the Obama administration, this has been a point of conflict between Erdogan and Obama, and this is mainly why the tension was still going on between the two administrations.
In Spain, truck drivers have started a new strike, hundreds of them marching through the capital, Madrid, against changes to freight rules and the cost of living. Protesters carried banners and chanted slogans such as, "We don't want subsidies, we want solutions." Several other cities also witnessed similar events, but in some locations, marches were called off. The truckers brought Spain to a halt earlier this year when they staged a month-long strike. It caused food shortages and a bout of inflation that hit quarterly economic growth. The truckers eventually obtained a 1 billion euro package that included rebates on the price of diesel fuel, but they say the rebates have been overtaken by the rise in fuel prices ever since. Organizers of the new strike say that they want to protect profit margins and keep truckers' costs down. That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
Under the starry sky of the desert, from the very heart of evergreen forests, with the radiance of silver-colored sand, in the midst of proud mountains, closer, Iran,
Hello. I am Mitra, an Iranian nature traveler. To know more about the wonders and beauties of magnificent Iran, keep me company.
Sorry, how can I get to Nasuri Castle in Kangan?
This bus is heading to Nasuri Street, where the castle is located.
I'm from South Africa. Actually, I'm interested in Iran, its history, its culture, and of course its tourist attractions.
Great, so I'll let you know when we arrived.
Thank you very much for your help.
Nasuri Historical Castle is located in Kangan County in Bushehr Province, southern Iran. This castle dates back to the Qajarid era. This monument belongs to the Nasuri family, and they built it on a high hill overlooking the Persian Gulf. The building has two inner and outer courtyards, a royal residence, and a wind catcher. The materials used in this monument include plaster and mud. 18 beautiful paintings from the renowned Iranian poet Ferdowsi's Shahnameh are carved on the west porch of the castle. This building was built by Sheikh Jabbar II, the grandfather of Sheikh Nasser Nasuri, in the early Qajar period. This castle has been registered in Iran National Heritage List.
Nasuri Castle. Any passenger wants to leave off?
Oh, yes. Yes, sir. We get off here.
Great.
It's for the first time you've been here?
No, it's the second time. I have been to many Iranian cities. I've been to Tehran, Isfahan, Mashhad, and this time I've traveled to Shiraz and to Bushehr.
Oh, that's great. By the way, I'm seeing the castle. Look at there.
Thank you very much for your help. You Iranians are very hospitable.
Thank you.
Mamnoon. Mutshakkiram.
So here I arrived. This castle is situated on a hill which overlooks the Persian Gulf. The gate of the castle is on the south, towards the Persian Gulf. It's a wooden gate with carvings and stud welding.
Ha ha ha!
Let me go inside. Wow. After the main entrance, there is a vast vestibule. And look at there. An Ivan with stone columns, which have all beautiful plaster work. Oh, I love them. This Ivan stretches to a chamber through wooden gates. Very beautiful. You can't believe this chamber is decorated with plaster work. On the northern part, there is a staircase which I can go up to see the second floor. Wow, these columns are unique. I can't take my eyes off them. And let me go up the stairs. I can see a big, amazing wind catcher. This wind catcher used to make the air inside cool. And I believe wind catchers are a masterpiece of Iranian architecture. Did you like the castle?
It was extraordinary. Iran is a very unique country. It's really spectacular. By the way, would you please take a photograph of me?
Yes, of course. Give me your camera, please. Ready? 1, 2, 3.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
يَا أَيُّهَا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا O you who believe, استعينوا بالصبر والصلاة.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear audience of IRIB English Radio, now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sayyid Asad Jafari.
The cultivation of an Islamic identity has been our topic. We want to, inside of the heart of our hearts, we want to be a proud Muslim that can identify with the deen. But there are barriers, and one of them I talked about yesterday was internalized Islamophobia. The second barrier that happens when we're trying to establish an Islamic identity is a lack of certainty. Our fourth imam has a beautiful statement. Allah, when anyone elevates me on the outside, lower me that much on the inside. It's a nice statement. The imam, of course, has ilm al-ladunni. At the same time, he knows without this purification, very easy. And we have countless examples of people, a little bit of knowledge in the Western world, in the Islamic world, in history, today, you name it. Without that proper tazkiyah, that ilm that should have left you, led you towards God, actually made you satanic in your thoughts and in your actions. Very easily. Worship should be fi sabilillah. Sometimes people like me, we do it fi sabilinnas. I compare my salat when everyone's watching to my salat at home. Oh, zameen asman ka farq hai. Big difference, unfortunately. When the whole world's watching, oh, my qaf and my ayns and my ha come from my stomach, forget my throat. I want to make sure you know I'm saying ayn and ha and hurting my throat saying it. But at home, this riya is a huge issue in our communities. This over-exaggeration of my own piety for the sake of others. Huge issue. Imam Muhammad Baqir, alayhi salatu wasalam, Allahumma salli ala. He says, can I tell you, one of the biggest challenges we have is sincerity. To be truly khulus in everything that we do, oh, it's very hard. He says the highest level of ikhlas is to do something for Allah, and not that you don't want praise. In fact, when praise comes from other than God, it angers you inside of you. People like me do one small good deed, I want 10 shabashes. And 10 thalia, pat me on my back, give me a plaque, tell me I changed your life. The same worship that should be for Allah can easily become an avenue towards shaitan. People go to Hajj and they leave their iman on the Kaaba and they come back. People who, with a lot of pride, say, oh, I've been to Karbala 17 times in my life, Malana, fantastic. They're a horrible human being, I'm sorry. A tragedy, you lose a loved one, it should lead you towards Allah. Many people now actually become the other way. What's the point? Itne namaz, itne dua, I prayed, only to have my husband be taken away from me. What's the point? Chortle, I'm out, forget it. Many, many times. My point is that this path of yaqeen and perfection in Islam is very relative, not absolute. We have to examine what is that path. Now, and also be careful and know that path can lead to shaitan. In my high school days, like 85 years ago, high school days. In my high school, they had a gym, and on the gym, they had a rock climbing wall. Okay, it was the latest thing back then, in the mid-90s. And yes, I joined the rock climbing club, me and a couple of my friends. I used to love it. Every morning, 8 a.m., we would go, and we would begin to climb. And they would tell us, make sure you do this, you do that. A couple of instructions that still stuck with me. Number one is this, that when you face the wall, map out visually your route up the wall. That rock, then this rock, then left leg here, right leg here, before you even start climbing, okay? If you get tired up the wall, stop on a rock and rest for a second. Number three, whatever you do, they would tell me, don't climb down the rock. Climb up the rock. In our journey towards God, whatever your journey is, apply these principles. There are moments where you need to pull over. There are moments where you need to stop and kind of map out your route. That's fine. Maybe you need to kind of stay still for a moment. That's fine. But don't climb down the journey. Don't allow your path, which is for Allah, to become for shaitan. That is the epitome of perfection and yaqeen. So certainty is not the idea that I can't ask questions. It's not. It's that I am able to invest in my path. I understand this path to be so strong that I'm going to invest in it over and over and over again. The sheer nature of faith is to fluctuate, is to ask questions, up and down, nothing wrong with that. But are you able to invest and work through the ups and downs because you believe in that path? That's what I want for you and me. That if I'm going to struggle, go up and down, peaks and valleys, tiring, draining, etc., etc., I'm going to do it on the path of Islam. This deserves my energy in my life. That's the yaqeen I want. Not that the moment the ocean gets a little bit now wavy, I'm out. No. Stay in the ocean, ride out the waves, because you believe in the ocean. This deen is not easy. I'm here to say it's not easy. I'm not delusional. At 16, 70, to submit to a higher power is very difficult. That's why God says, do it within your capacity. One of my favorite traditions of the Holy Prophet is that you worship Allah to the best of your ability. To the best of your ability. He won't get tired of accepting your worship so long as you won't get tired of worshiping Him. Whatever level it is. If that means your whole life you're trying to nail down Fajr, that's okay. If that means that your whole life you're just trying to get to a point you can read one or two verses of the Quran once or twice a week, that's okay. This is not a comparison game. It's a capacity game. What you're able to do is what God will take from you. Don't be like Shaitan. Shaitan played the comparing game. Oh, he's clay, I'm fire. Oh, he's this, he's that. No, God says, look, you have your path. Embrace your path. In your grave, in my grave, I won't be asked based on your amal. You won't be asked based on my amal. Everyone has their own journey. But once you embrace your journey, embrace your journey. Be certain on it. Work towards it. Ride out those times when you are low and fly when you are high. Imam Ali says that when your nawafil interrupt with your wajib, drop the nawafil. Just do what is fara'id on you, what is fard on you, what's wajib on you. Because there will be moments where even the wajib isn't enough. I want more. So do more at that moment. But there are moments where even that wajib is such a task. Do your wajib, khalas. I get phone calls, right? Malana, I recite Surah Mulk and Surah Rahman, Surah Yasin before bed. Beautiful habit. Beautiful. Kabhi kabhi thak jati hu main. I get tired sometimes. I fall asleep in the Quran. Is it okay? Yes, sister, it's okay. It's all right. Don't push yourself. If you have tawfiq, if at that moment now you're able to read with tafsir and translation, mashallah, that's great. If you're tired, it's okay. Sometimes I think we think God wants all or nothing. Absolutely not. He sees you. He sees your struggle. He knows your childhood. He knows your upbringing. He knows your mental health. He knows all these things. He's a loving, compassionate, merciful Lord who wants from you what you can give Him. But give Him your best. If you have questions, if you have doubts, get those doubts answered. Once you have certainty, then that identity begins to develop. Then yeah, you walk around saying, I'm a Muslim. I'm a follower of the Ahlul Bayt. Absolutely.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karim Adi Ali حالي حاكم متين غفور شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور صلي على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
Join us in this journey. IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
in the limelight.
Economists are saying recession in the Eurozone is almost inevitable. According to surveys, the countries of the Eurozone will face an economic recession in the next year with a probability of about 80% due to a sharp increase in energy prices and a sharp decrease in the supply of electricity and gas. We have taken a look at some of the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Euronews has covered this story. According to the European Commission's autumn economic forecast, the Eurozone and most European Union countries will head to an economic recession in the last quarter of 2022. The European Union Economy Commissioner, Paolo Gentiloni, at a press conference said, "The economic situation has deteriorated markedly and we are heading into two quarters of contraction." The EU's executive revised up its inflation forecast from July, predicting that prices would peak at year-end and remain high in 2023. Brussels said inflation will average 9.3% in the European Union and 8.5% in the Eurozone for 2022. The European Commission said in a statement, "The European Union is among the most exposed advanced economies to high prices due to its geographical proximity to the war and heavy reliance on gas imports from Russia." The statement added, "The energy crisis is eroding households' purchasing power and weighing on production." While prices are expected to come down in 2023, inflation is still predicted to be at 7% in the European Union and 6.1% in the Eurozone, before decreasing to 3% in the European Union and 2.6% in the Eurozone in 2024. The EU forecast was based on the assumption that geopolitical tensions such as the war in Ukraine would neither normalize nor escalate, and that sanctions against Russia would remain in place. But the EU Economy Commissioner, Paolo Gentiloni, said the impact of adopted or planned fiscal energy measures adds uncertainty to the forecast for energy inflation. Average inflation for 2022 was highest in the Baltic countries, where it was forecast to be 19.3% in Estonia, 18.9% in Lithuania, and 16.9% in Latvia this year. EU labour markets are expected to react to the slowing economy but remain resilient, with unemployment growth expected to be at 1.8% before coming to a standstill in 2023. Unemployment rates in the European Union were projected to be at 6.2% in 2022, 6.5% in 2023, and 6.4% in 2024. The European Central Bank, the ECB, has meanwhile raised interest rates three times this year to tackle the rising prices. The ECB could continue to raise interest rates, which impacts commercial banks, meaning that mortgages and credit cards would become more expensive. The Central Bank's Governing Council said at the end of last month that inflation remained far too high and will stay above the target for an extended period of time. According to Eurostat's flash estimate, at the end of the month, inflation in the Eurozone reached a record high of 10.7% in October. The increase was fueled by energy prices, which Eurostat estimated were 41.9% higher than in the same month last year. Prices for food and tobacco were up by 13.1% compared to the same time last year. There have been multiple strike movements in European Union countries demanding higher wages because of record inflation. China's Xinhua News Agency has also covered the same story. The European economy is slowing down and a contraction is predicted at least for the winter months due to the energy crisis and high inflation. Pascal Donohue, president of the Eurogroup, said everyone knows that the economy within the euro area is slowing down. In October, economic growth for the euro area stood at 0.5%, adding, "If we look at high-frequency indicators and the economic sentiment, we see that many things point to a contraction in economic activity this winter." The finance ministers representing the 19-country euro area met in Brussels, Belgium, recently to discuss the eurozone's economic development, as well as budgetary measures to mitigate the impact of high energy prices. According to estimates by the European Commission, euro area governments have so far collectively spent about 200 billion euros, or 1.25% of the European Union's gross domestic product GDP, on energy support for the year. Pascal Donohue said around 70% of the supporting measures adopted by the member states so far are untargeted, meaning they benefit all or a very large share of the population. He added, "We are aware, of course, that targeting is not always easy, politically and technically, especially if you have to react very quickly. This is also why we have the expectation that this targeting of measures can improve in the coming months." Pascal Donohue added, "The ministers noticed the challenges of significant support and effectively managing the trade-off between reducing inflation while supporting both vulnerable households and the euro area's international competitiveness." British news outlet The Guardian has also covered the same story. According to a survey, one in four Europeans described their financial position as precarious. More than half see a serious risk it will become so over the coming months, and 80% have already been forced into hard spending choices. As the cost of living crisis driven by high energy prices, rampant inflation, and the Russia-Ukraine conflict tightens its grip, the six-country survey for the French anti-poverty NGO Secours Populaire painted an alarming picture of a continent on the brink. More than half, or 54%, of more than 6,000 people across France, Germany, Greece, Italy, Poland, and the United Kingdom told the pollster Ipsos their purchasing power had fallen over the past 3 years, mostly because of higher food prices, higher fuel prices, heating and rent bills. The hardest hit country was Greece, where 68% of respondents said their spending power had fallen a lot or somewhat since 2019. This was followed by France in second position with 63%, Italy in third position with 57%, Germany in fourth position with 54%, and Britain in fifth position with 48%. Poland was in sixth position with 38%. About 80% of respondents said they had already been forced to make significant compromises, including cutting down on travel, 62%, cutting down on heating, 47%, borrowing from friends and family, 42%, finding a second job, 40%, and skipping their meals, 29%. Across the six countries, 64% said they were now often or sometimes unable to decide what to cut next, as they had already cut what they could have cut. 28% said they were overdrawn by mid-month, and 27% often or sometimes feared losing their home. On average, about 27% of respondents across the six countries said their financial and material situation was precarious, defined as one unexpected expenditure could change everything.
have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Faith and Selective Duty. Monday, the 6th of Ramadan, 1394, the 23rd of September, 1974. All the response of the faithful when they are summoned to Allah and His Apostle that He may judge between them is to say, We hear and obey. It is they who are the felicitous. Whoever obeys Allah and His Apostle and fears Allah and is wary of Him, it is they who will be the triumphant. Surah Nur, number 24, verses 51 and 52. This is another very important issue in the discussion of faith. Namely, the moral duties of the believer do not only apply sometimes or whenever he feels like it. It is not the case that if someone calls himself a believer, even though he violates his moral code whenever it is convenient or beneficial for him, then he is a believer. Just because someone calls themselves a believer and makes a show of piety that he is such, that he has combined faith and action as he claims, it is only when faith and piety are of more benefit to him than transgression and sin that he returns to the names of Islam, faith and morality. Here we are going to discuss this quality that the Quran discusses in various contexts and which we ascribe to people who are self-serving. We said that self-serving people are like this. But all people in the world are self-serving. After all, who goes out in search of loss?
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
When we call someone self-serving, however, what we mean are those who are ready to sacrifice worldly benefits for their own personal interest. They transgress in serving themselves. Their behavior is like this. They believe and act piously to the extent that they desire and to the extent that is beneficial to them. They call themselves believers and make a show of morality and piety in the pursuit of personal benefit. From the point of view of Islam, these kinds of individuals are not believers. The Quran explicitly states that these people have no faith. Therefore, when we are discussing faith, which is one of the most fundamental topics in understanding Islamic thought, we draw the conclusion that if faith is not accompanied by a sense of duty and moral responsibility, if someone who claims to be a believer does not follow through by fulfilling these moral duties or doing righteous deeds, in the Quranic parlance, this is not genuine faith, and such hollow and empty faith will have no effect. In addition to this, we must also see that the kind of moral duty we are discussing is permanent and unceasing.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.